Welcome back to Worst Seats in the House. Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta coming to you from outside at beautiful Delwood Country Club here on a Wednesday morning. There is a big tournament going on right now. The Minnesota Golf Association Women's Match Play Championship is going to go on right around us here. We'll deliver
the play-by-play. Can you tone it down to a whisper so you can?
Yeah, I know.
She's
I'm like screaming here.
18-foot putt here, and we're.
But we are at the tee boxes of between 1 and 10 here at Delwood.
It's always cool when these clubs have the Minnesota tournaments like mm-hmm. that, where they do such a great job with them. And I've had a chance to play a couple where I haven't actually played in the tournament, but got to go play the course like the day before, right, the day after, when they have the course in absolute tip-top shape. And I mean, Delwood's a great course anyway, and I thoroughly enjoy when I get the chance to play out here. But when they get it really geared up for a tourney, it's kind of fun. And the tournament feel, I mean, even though it's not, this isn't like a PGA Tour stop event, just the way that, you know, things get ramped up and mm-hmm. you got the guys with the earpieces driving around so that they can keep the scores updated and everything. It's kind of fun when you see it.
Yeah, no, it is pretty cool. My buddy Andrew McCain, who I can't remember if we've had on the podcast, but I met him because he used to come to my podcast with Suhan. He was a Minnesota State Open 2- or 3-time champion.
I played with him out here.
Oh, yeah. Right. And last summer, he actually worked here during the pandemic, and now he's down. He moved full-time to Florida, and he's a professional golfer and
He was a little better than me the day we played out here.
He hammers the ball. The ball sounds unbelievable coming off his club.
You don't think it sounds incredible when it comes off my club?
You're getting better.
No, it was good. So at that time, he was playing on the Canadian Tour.
Right.
And they, in between tourneys, he would come play here. And when you play with somebody that's playing at that level, you realize just how good so the Canadian Tour is a step below the Korn Ferry Tour, which is a step below the PGA Tour. And yet, as I'm playing with him and just the shots he could hit and the how tight he'd get with his irons to pins and what his expectations were, it was like, okay, well, I'm getting better. I'm hitting most fairways. I'm, keeping the score respectable. And all of a sudden you play with somebody like that and you're like, whoa, we're playing a different game.
The coolest part of that tour when he was on that tour was they had these pro-ams day or two before the actual tournament started. So the pro-ams, the celebrities essentially up there are hockey players. So before every single tournament, he would send me you're not going to believe who I'm playing with today. And one day they were up in, I think, Kelowna, and he played with Jordan Tutu, Todd Simpson, who I covered in Florida, who's one of the biggest pranksters that I've ever covered. And I can't remember who the other guy, it might have been Wade Redden or somebody. And he had an absolute blast. And, it's funny, you go into an event like that and you hear all these stories for years and years and years about Jordan Tutu, and the two of them just hit it off right away. And he's played with people like Kyle Connor, big star of the my hockey team and Donkey Hockey League.
Yeah.
So stuff like that. So as we mentioned, we're out here at Delwood Country Club. Anthony and me, we opened the show yesterday when I was filling in for Paul Allen on KFAN. And I want to start off this podcast by talking about the same subject, and that is the tragic loss of Tommy Curvers, the Wild assistant general manager, former Hobie Baker winner at University of Minnesota Duluth, star high school hockey player. He always said he was not the best player even on his own team. It was Jay North, he used to say. I think Jay North, right?
Jay North at Jefferson, and then it was Bill Watson at Duluth.
Oh, okay.
And he said, I won the Hobie Baker, and I was the second best player on my own team.
Yeah, he used to joke around that his senior year at Duluth, the year that they wound up losing in 4 overtimes to Bowling Green, the national championship game, he was living with a couple guys, but one was Norm McIver, who worked forever for the Chicago Blackhawks. Now he's with the Seattle Kraken. But Norm was his college roommate, and he used to say he told this story once. I don't know if it was on my podcast or if it was just a story that he told in person, but it was midway through his senior year or even 3/4 through his senior year. All of a sudden, Norm's going through the stats nationwide and just says to him, you're going to win this, Hobie Baker. And it was the first time it even dawned on Tommy that he even had a chance.
Well, that's just him, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when you listen to his stories, they all were told in that mm-hmm. way where, yeah, you know, I was in the right place at the right time. I was a decent player, but there were better guys around me. And but he was a part of the first Jefferson team to make it to the state tournament. He was, I believe it was the first Duluth team that had gone to mm-hmm. to the final of the Frozen Four. It wasn't really called the Frozen Four back then, but had gone to the NCAA finals. And it just, he's just such an unbelievable guy. And everybody with whom he crossed paths in the hockey world had nothing but great things to say about him. And I've been reflecting over the last few days on, I mean, I had met him a couple of times over the years, but really just his first season with the Wild, had a few chances to really sit down and chat with him. And I'll never forget the first time. So when he was hired, we were going to do a feature on him. So
yeah.
I researched his career and everything just to make sure that I had some of the details down. And then we sat down in one of the rooms at the Xcel Energy Center and chatted for probably a half an hour to make a 5 or 6 minute feature. And when we got done, he turned to me and he said, "It is so humbling when somebody takes the time to research your life." And he said, that was like, it was impressive how much you knew about me. And he said, and he just looked at me and he was sincere. He was like, "You took that much time to research me and my life?" And a couple weeks later, he told me that he had gone home and told his wife that, mm-hmm. and that, you know, she couldn't believe it. And mm-hmm. I was like, well, number one, your life is amazing. I mean, yeah. what you've achieved is significant. Number two, I mean, that is kind of what you do when you're going to interview somebody, is you take the time to research them. But he was so flattered by the fact that, and legitimately flattered, not just, you know, he wasn't being phony about it. And that was just the way he was. He just was unassuming and yet had every reason to have confidence and borderline arrogance, and yet yeah. he had none of it.
Yeah. I still remember in January, late January of, I think it was 2019, had to be 2019, I was talking outside the Dallas Stars locker room in Dallas to Paul Fenton, and you could just tell he was rattled. And I can't remember if I had already found out. I believe I did, but he divulged to me what was going on, and with Tommy. And so I reached out to Tom, and I think that's how it came out. I think I asked Paul Fenton, "Do you think that you know, it'd be okay if I texted Tom and just, you know, wish him my best and see if there's ever a point that he did want me to write an article?" And Tom, you know, to his, I mean, I thought strength and credit, he finally just said, "You know what? I think it would help me. Help me tell my story." And so I think it was the 9 days after his diagnosis, he and I met at the St. Paul Grill. And we're sitting down and, you know, you feel terrible. I mean, he's told that he has an inoperable lung cancer and he's never smoked a day in his life and all this stuff. And so, you know, I'm rummaging over the menu, and all of a sudden he taps his phone really hard, and I look at his eyes, and he's got tears in his eyes, and he goes, "This is what's so beautiful basically about the NHL is he just showed me the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of text messages and support that he had received around the hockey world without it even being announced yet what was going on, but he told a couple people, and it, you know, kind of spread like that. And it was the lead of my article. So I wrote this story where essentially he announced what was going on, and it was the lead of my article. And I was rereading it the other day, and the whole image sort of came right back on me, where as I was reading, I started welling up at just the memory of him being, and the point of me telling this is that he was so touched at how much support he was already getting from the hockey world. And then I wrote the story, and then he's up in the press box and scouts are just coming up to him with tears in his eyes. I remember vividly, he had this conversation in the corner of the press box right behind the GM's booth there with Chris Pryor, who's now, I think, with the, I would assume that the Pittsburgh Penguins, because he was Ron Hextall's right-hand man for years in Philadelphia. And the two of them with just tears in their eyes. And I think it just, but that whole memory just reminds me of, like, again, what he was, it was about what everybody else was feeling.
Well, yeah. And it just is, the hockey world is tight.
Yeah.
And they respond that way to many. But with him, it just was, it was so thorough. And because of the fact that, he had worked his way up in these organizations the way he did and had worked at literally every level in these organizations that he had just developed such a great respect, and he was just such a good person, just such a great human. And the way that no matter who would come up with a story, somebody would have crossed paths with him in that story, and he would, and it was legit that, like, well, yeah, this guy. And what always amazed me about him is that, and we talked about this on the radio yesterday, is that he, when he asked you a question, he listened, he cared and listened to the answer. He wasn't just making small talk. He wanted to know. And you know, the number of people with whom he crossed paths and where I probably fell down that list, but I'll never forget, like, the second time I ever chatted with him, he remembered, you know, how many kids I had and was like, okay, well, you know, what's the latest with your son? And I mean, things like that where it was, and he asked about them and knew about them. And I just think it was, I just think he was legit in every way. It was real. It was, he's just a high quality guy and gone way too soon, and he'll be missed. I wish he would have had more years with us in Minnesota and a part of the organization, because I think his role and his presence would have bled through in a big way had he been able to be with us for a longer time. And you know, he just those nights of telling stories, and I know that the other story I shared was a night with Bob Mason and Darby Hendrickson in a team banquet room in a San Jose hotel where we sat up way too late till the wee hours, just, and I could have sat there for another 4 hours just listening to the stories of the people in Minnesota with whom those three guys had crossed paths, and the games they had played and tournaments they were in, and stories of the legends of Minnesota hockey, and these guys were all a part of that. So it's there's just been so many stories popping through my head over the last couple of days. It's, I'm rambling a little bit, but it he's just such a great guy. I'm proud to have been able to call him a friend, and I just, I can't, I feel so badly for his family.
Yeah, me too. You know, as you were saying that, the one thing that I remember also is, like, the month before he got the job with the Wild, he was pre-scouting the Tampa Bay Lightning-Winnipeg Jets series just in case Tampa Bay played Winnipeg in the Stanley Cup Final. And I was covering the Vegas-Winnipeg series. So he was staying at the Delta Hotel, and every morning we had a standing date, essentially, to go up and have breakfast. But that breakfast was not just 40 minutes. You know how, like, in a concierge lounge, you eat and get out, right?
Yep.
He, me, and Dean Grillo, the agent, I can't remember. There was a weather issue, too, and he wound up having to extend his trip to get back down to Minnesota. So he had his golf clubs up there and everything, and Tom and him would golf every day. But Tom would essentially hold court telling stories, and it would be 2, 3, 4 hours every single morning until their golf game. And I would just sit there, and then it was pretty much the three of us, but then any scout that came in or somebody that worked for the Vegas Golden Knights or the referees, they would come and sit. And it was just one of those memories that, you know, years from now you cherish, right? Those just that hour of just sitting down or multiple hours every day just sitting down and shooting the breeze with hockey people. It's what I love most about this job. It's the behind the scenes stuff that I always love. So, you know, just a tragic loss. We obviously wish the best for his family, his wife, Heather, his four children, his four brothers and sisters, his dad, Jim, and all his extended family and friends. That's the one thing that was very clear the last couple of days is how many friends Tom Curver's had around the hockey world. So we are, again, at Delwood Country Club. We're going to talk a little Wild. You know, how about last night, Anthony? Let's start with this Montreal series with the Vegas Golden Knights. I'm just shocked.
It's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, 3-2 going home with a chance to go to the Stanley Cup Final. You know, all year, I mean, they fired their coach this year. They look like they had this unbelievable start to the season, if I remember correctly. And then they went into the doldrums and really struggled. And now they are looking like a heck of a team. They got depth. Their fourth line's Eric Staal and Corey Perry, you know?
Well, I think at the beginning of the season, so let's go back to the start. I remember watching preview show of the North Division on, it was either on Sportsnet or TSN, I can't remember which one, and a couple of the guys picked Montreal to win the North. And I remember thinking about it and like, man, I got to go back and look a little closer at who they added, because I thought Toronto was clearly better than everybody else, and I would have thought that Winnipeg and Edmonton would have been the closest teams to them. But I thought there was a big gap between Toronto. And so I started to look, and it's like, yeah, you know, I kind of like a couple of their additions. And they did get off to a great start, but then, you know, they frankly wouldn't have even made the playoffs in a normal year with the, if the divisions were aligned the way they normally are. But this series has really surprised me. But as we've talked so many times about the way momentum changes in a playoff series, if Fleury doesn't mishandle that puck in game three, I think the series ends last night.
Right.
Vegas would have been up 3-1 going home for game five, and I think the series is over. And the one game Montreal had won in the first four prior to that, if you remember, they jumped out 3-0, and then Vegas pounded them for the third period, got it to 3-2, but just couldn't. But it was a men versus boys third period. And then Vegas won game three, and I thought, all right, they will reassert their dominance. They would have won game three if Fleury doesn't mishandle the puck. They then win game four, and you're thinking, all right, this is when this thing gets back to Vegas. This is where Vegas does what Tampa did to the Islanders, I thought. Mm-hmm. And I thought we were going to see a 5-0 Vegas win in game five. And I wasn't watching the game that closely, but I saw the score 1-0, and I thought, wow, that shocks me. Then I had it on in the background last night as we had some other people stop by our house, and I kept looking up, and I think Montreal just scored again. I think Montreal, and I can't figure it out. I don't know how they are able to slow down the Vegas forwards, because there have been stretches in the series where Vegas has done exactly what we thought they would do, and that is dominate the games. But Montreal's going home with a chance to win the series.
Isn't it amazing about Marc-Andre Fleury's career? I mean, this is a no doubt Hall of Famer, yet he has lost his job. Like now, I mean, you're definitely coming back Robin Leonard, I would think, in game six, right? And, you know, and it was Leonard that got them to last night being even. But you look at the two Stanley Cup champions, the last two, not the one in 2009, but the two Stanley Cup championships in 2016 and 17, Murray's in net when the Pittsburgh Penguins win the cup. But we also remember early in his career when in the playoffs where he had like the mental, like where it would just like one goal would turn into six bad goals. There were some games where they had to pull him during some of those playoff runs. But it's just an interesting thing here about Marc-Andre is that as good a goalie as he is, I mean, this is a repeat thing with him.
Well, I still believe that if the Marcus Foligno goal counts in the Minnesota series, mm-hmm. Fleury probably doesn't come out for the second period of that game. He gave up three, and it was like three on like seven or eight shots, I think, in that period. And if that goal stands and it's 3-0 after one in game three, I'm not sure he starts the second period.
Yeah, Eriksson Ek scored it, I think, right?
Was that the Ek one?
Yeah, wasn't there two Ek goals that were disallowed? Foligno was in the crease, but I think it was...
Ek goal, sorry. But it was the Foligno interference that took it away. And so it was... It would have been 3-0 if they pull Fleury. I mean, Minnesota probably wins game three. Mm-hmm. Number two, I think Leonard comes out for the second period and then maybe starts game four. Mm-hmm. I mean, depending on what happens in that game. Who knows how that series changes? But that goal got overturned, and of course Vegas came from behind to win the game. But Fleury was on the ropes at that moment. Remember? I mean, that he hadn't been sharp in the series, was giving away a pile of rebounds, and you know, and was on the verge of being down 3-0 in the first period of game three. So it isn't abnormal to see him melt down in the playoffs, but that one mishandle in a game that Vegas had in their back pocket that would have put a stranglehold on this series, it's that simple.
Yeah.
One play like that, and now all of a sudden, Montreal's got life, they win that game in overtime, and now they're playing with a ton of confidence and going home up 3-2. Who knows?
And that's not the first time. You know, like, he's a, I think he's a really good puck handler, and I thought that he did a great job against the Wild handling the puck and really eliminating the Wild's ability to dump the puck, which at times he really had to do because they were turning it over left and right. But every time the Wild dumped it, he came out and made the play. But he's done this before. Like, there was several years ago where he made a huge puck handling mistake, and he said all along that it stayed in his head for a long time. And I think that led into Pete DeBoer's thinking as well. But he did a similar thing in the Colorado series. The only difference was the Vegas Golden Knights actually wound up winning, I believe, in overtime. I think it was the Mark Stone breakaway goal. But, man, it's just amazing to me that Montreal's in this position. Cole Caulfield's been outstanding this series, 3 goals. Suzuki was unbelievable last night. Toffoli's been great all postseason, which I just can't believe. And then
Toffoli's
you have
been great all year. Yeah. And then it was Toffoli and Josh Anderson that were the two additions that I thought really changed, and that was when, going back to the beginning of the season, mm-hmm. to look at them, I mean those guys are, they're both a little bit under the radar type players. You know, I mean, they're better than what I think the perception is of those guys. They bring a little more to the table. But Suzuki is a game-changing talent. I remember, this is the first draft pick in the history of the Vegas Golden Knights. He was their first round pick in their first draft. So it's kind of ironic to see him
absolutely
being the guy that's tormenting them right now.
Yeah. Josh Anderson for Max Domi. You think Jarmo Kekalainen doesn't want to do over there? Holy moly.
No doubt.
Man, not a good trade in hindsight. That's for absolute sure. And stemming from 2 years ago when they sold the farm to get Duchesne, and now they're in a position here where they might have to sell the farm to get Jack Eichel, which we'll talk more about here in a little bit as well. I do want to talk to you about the Tampa Bay Lightning, New York Islanders series that could end as well tonight. But first, here's a word from Bosch Law Firm.
Jerry Bosch here from Bosch Law Firm and WorkCompExperts.com. If you've been injured at work, call us. Even if the insurer is paying your claim, we'd be happy to discuss your situation to make sure you're being paid all the appropriate benefits. I can guarantee you that the insurance company is not telling you everything you need to know to maximize the value of your claims and protect your future. The call is always free, and there's never a fee unless we win benefits on your behalf, and we service clients all over the state of hockey. So please call the WorkComp experts at Bosch Law Firm, 651-333-8300, or find us at workcompexperts.com.
Make sure the water in your home is soft throughout your entire home with a Kinetico water treatment system at Aquarius Home Services Kinetico, your local authorized dealer for Kinetico water treatment systems. Their water specialist will test your water and recommend one of their many, many water treatment options that solve any water problem in your home, giving you peace of mind. Kinetico water treatment systems are proven to be the world's most efficient water softener with continuous soft water that, by the way, requires no electricity. And Kinetico provides the best reverse osmosis system in the industry, providing worry-free drinking water, also not only for your water, but your coffee, which I got this new Nespresso machine, Anthony, that's been unbelievable. So Aquarius believes in earning the right to be recommended. There's just a click away at AquariusHomeServices.com, and don't forget to mention that Russo sent you. And here's a word from Minnesota Propane Association.
Hi, I'm Laura Shara, and do you really know what it costs to heat water at your home, cabin, or business? No? Well, we do. Based on data from the U.S. Department of Energy, the average annual savings for homes that heat their water with propane rather than electricity is $175. You can save energy and get 2.5 times as much hot water compared to the average electric water heater. Let's save energy and money with a cleaner, greener fuel. Propane. The right energy right now.
Back here, worst seats in the house. Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta coming to you on a beautiful Wednesday morning at Delwood Country Club. Anthony, Tampa Bay, New York Islanders. I think the Lightning just said, you know what? I think we're done screwing around last game. 8-0 victors now can go to Nassau Coliseum and close that arena tonight, which will be a tragic, tragic circumstance in my life if we don't see another Islander game at that beautiful barn. But man,
beautiful barn might be a stretch.
Beautiful. Historic barn. Smells unbelievable.
The smells are unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't know if the smell is healthy, but it's unbelievable.
It's not rosy.
I like it.
It's not pleasant.
Yeah.
I think it's significant.
Great. It reminds me of my childhood.
Well, that's what I mean, is it's historic, but I don't know if I'd call it a beautiful barn. It had its time.
Yeah. Let's talk Braden Point now. 8 straight games with a goal. That's two off the NHL record. After 13 goals last year in the postseason, when he really could have been the Conn Smythe winner, now he's going to eclipse that this postseason. It certainly looks like it. The guy is just money, and he's like stands up to you and I are not the tallest people in the world. He probably comes up to our shoulders.
He's been great. I mean, really, and Tampa's the better team. And I don't know if 8-0 is indicative, but they're the better team. I would expect that they would close things out, although I'd be surprised if it wasn't a battle tonight.
Yeah,
I mean, the way the Islanders defend, and I would assume that they will, anytime you get blown out the way they did, there's an attention to detail the next game, and I would imagine we'd see that from the Islanders in this game. I'd still pick Tampa. But I think the biggest topic with Tampa is the whole salary cap circumvention thing. I believe the NHL has to do something to change this, where you still should have to be cap compliant when you get to the postseason. And I know that they're not doing anything illegal. They went through the season the way they did. They were talented enough to get to that point without some of these guys on their active roster. And for that, they deserve credit. But at the same time, I mean, this is, to some degree, it's making a mockery of the salary cap system. I mean, they are so far beyond what the cap would allow during a regular campaign that this isn't even, you're not comparing apples to apples when you compare their roster.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, the one thing, though, is they do have a couple guys that are on that cap that are fake, which is another issue, are fake salary caps, right? Marion Gaborik. I didn't even know until I had Joe Smith on KFAN yesterday that Marion Gaborik was on their roster. Anders Nielsen, I think they have, too. So that was the other issue. They made those moves at the beginning of the season to add this dead cap space so they can go in else. You know, it's just...
That doesn't... Like, it's all... I just think there are some loopholes that could be cleaned up in this. And, you know, the whole taking on dead contracts like that, I think
is... You see stuff like this, and then you think about how the Wild retroactively got screwed with the Parisi Suter cap recapture. It's just sometimes it's like this league just makes rules up as they go along. Even the other day, I emailed somebody from the league to just check on buyouts, you know, if you could trade Parisi to Seattle and buy him out and get out of retroactive. And the only answer I'm told is we decide on a case by case basis. Well, that's where you leave yourself open.
Well,
to,
I mean, there's so many because it's like, remember the whole, Marian Hossa situation where, because he just said he was injured instead of retiring, that saved the Blackhawks. And you know,
when Chris Pronger was like on the, was it the Flyers cap but working for the NHL at the time? I
mean, right,
just, you know, it's just like stuff like that. It's just unbelievable.
Fact that, you know, I mean, who knows, it's all even
and
when
he was working for the league and his cap space was traded to Arizona, which is, it was even more of a, just like a joke.
And but when you talk to general managers, a lot of times they like almost roll their eyes and look at you because they don't understand it. And they're like, I don't know how that works. I don't know how. And I do remember, in fact, we had a conversation, I think it was you and I, with Chuck Fletcher when the Pronger dead cap hit or whatever got traded. And we're like, how does a guy who's working for the National Hockey League get traded?
Yeah.
That doesn't even make any sense.
And then when the league tries to justify it and they just give, you know, send out kind of like a word salad made up thing, kind of like everything I say on this podcast, a bunch of word salad.
A word salad. I kind of like that.
Yeah. But Kucherov comes in. He's just been outstanding. Stamkos breaks out last game. Hedman's having another heck of a postseason. Vasilevsky's been unreal. That team looks like they're poised to win a second straight Stanley Cup. But, hey, if Montreal winds up winning the series, I still hope that Vegas figures out a way to come back. I would love to see a Vegas-Tampa Bay Stanley Cup final. I think that'd be... That'd be pretty awesome to watch. Let's talk about Kirill Kaprizov, Anthony. You know, touchy situation. Obviously, I had Bill Guerin on the radio yesterday. He did his best to try to defuse the situation. But what's gone on here is the Wild, you know, thought this would be an easy negotiation, I think. I mean, they've made him 7 and 8 year overtures. Clearly, in my eyes, at around north of $8.5 million, maybe even $9 million. I'm pretty sure that he's on a long, long, long term max deal that he can make $72 million bucks or ish, about $9 million a year. And I think that Bill Guerin's actually really shocked that he hasn't jumped at that type of thing. Now, from Paul, from his agent's point of view, you know, while that might sound like unbelievable money, in 3 years, if he continues on this trajectory, he could get maybe 12, 13 million if the cap keeps on going up. So he, what he wants to do is sign him to a bridge deal, leave him the ability to maximize his value in 2, 3, 4 years, hit a home run type of contract. And that has put the Wild in a tough, tough spot because they don't want to go three or less because that could walk him straight into unrestricted free agency, kind of like Artemi Panarin was able to. A bridge deal caused the Chicago Blackhawks to have to trade him to the Columbus Blue Jackets because they were in cap hell. And then he went and took advantage of his free agency and signed with the same agent, $11.6 million per year on a 7-year deal with the Rangers. So Billy Guerin doesn't want to go three or less. So they're going to probably have to meet somewhere in the middle here. And be, there needs to be some sort of compromise from Kaprizov's side where maybe his agent at least says, all right, you know what, how about 4 or 5 years? And then they work out something from that point of view, because I don't think Billy, I don't think Billy's going to blink here. I'd be shocked if we wake up at any point this summer and finds him three or less, even with this threat that he could stay in Russia and play in the cage.
And I think, and I'm 100% in Guerin's corner on this negotiation. And if it, and I know Wild fans would hate to see that happen, but you cannot allow a player like this to, that sets the organization back like 8, 10 years, because all of a sudden you've got, if you all of a sudden allow a guy, and Minnesota has some leverage in this. We talked about this, I think, on last week's show, where, I mean, okay, if that's, if you want to do that, well, then go enjoy life in Moscow for the next 3 years. Mm-hmm. And you will not play in the National Hockey League for anybody else for 3 years. And then I'm not sure you do hit that home run contract 3 years from now, because now you have 50 games of NHL experience to go into that market as a free agent and say, all right, who wants me? And, yeah, I mean, see, even so though everything looks like Kirill Kaprizov is the real deal as a superstar, let's not forget he's got 56 games under his belt in the National Hockey League. I mean, it's, I'm not saying I think Billy should say, oh, well, we got to wait and see if he's, but you just
can't. No, he's doing the opposite. He's offering him $9 million a year.
Right, I know, exactly. So I believe that he is, he's been fair. He's been more than fair. And if Kaprizov digs in his heels for this, I mean, I would hope that Wild fans would be on the side of the organization in this negotiation.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, I get both sides. I mean, look at the Nathan MacKinnon contract. In fact, I'll call that up. I'll do a word salad while I call this up. But, you know, like I get his agent's point of view. And at some point, I think that just the longer this goes, at some point, Kaprizov's going to have to get involved and say, all right, like, how can we compromise here? Because it's clear he's listening to his agent. I don't behoove him from that. I mean, he's a great kid. You could tell this is not him running the show. And I don't think that anybody should look at him and being, you know, like, you know, blame him for any of this. This is just a contract negotiation. Sometimes they take a lot. It's a lot harder. Yeah, look at that. I mean, like, Nathan MacKinnon makes $6.3 million a year, and he's got 2 more years left on that contract. So he is going to be, at the end of that contract, probably the fourth highest paid player on the Avalanche, and he's probably the one of top two players in the National Hockey League. And so I think, you know, 6.3 is a lot different than 9 million, but I think that's what his agent's trying to avoid here. The problem is that, you know, the history of Kirill Kaprizov is somebody that took him forever to get here. He's on his third agent. So you also have this history here that if you're Bill Guerin, you cannot put yourself as an organization in a position where if you sign him for three or less, you're either walking him to free agency or you're putting him in 2 years where he's going to play hardball and force you to trade him. You've got to secure him. And the other thing here is that, you know, somebody close to Kaprizov has pointed out to me that he's not 24, so he's trying to maximize his earnings here. Well, it's not the Wild's problem to say, all right, you blew 6 years of earnings potential and now we're going to overpay you to make up for that. Right. It was your decision, even though there was a lot of politics behind the scenes going around that kept him in Russia. But it was his decision to stay. So it's not the Wild that are going to make up for 6 years of KHL salary to get him to, you know, $14 million now.
What they've offered him is, I mean, it's all relative to say fair. I mean, you're whatever the contract is, the guy is set for life.
Yeah.
I mean, he is, even if he signs a 3-year deal and never plays again, he's set for life. I mean, that we're talking about, you know, and yeah, I mean, Nathan MacKinnon, you're right, but it's not like he's going to the soup line.
Yeah.
I mean, he is making plus million dollars per season. And
but I don't care like how good of a teammate you are, and like, you know, when you're the best player in the world and you're sitting there and you're looking around, well, Rantanen makes 9.3 and Landeskog's probably about to make more than 6.3 and McCarr's soon going to make this. You start to think, yeah, like, it's just common. It's common.
It's,
you know,
there's there for sure. It's human nature.
Yeah, yeah. There
you and go. It's I'll spit out your word salad for you.
Yeah, thank you.
It's human nature, but at the same time, I always believe, like, and it's the same in any profession. You signed the contract. It was the best contract you could get at the time you signed it. And if you had had the leverage to get more, you would have gotten more. It isn't like you walked into the room and said, hey, I'll take less so that we can build this around. And then you're saying, okay, I took less, but he didn't. Yeah. That's where, to me, you signed the best deal you could possibly sign. Well, now honor it and play it and don't bitch about it. I mean, if you had been able to demand $9 million the day you were negotiating, you would have gotten $9 million. And that's the way it is. So I don't know. I don't feel a tremendous amount of sympathy for players that now look around and say, well, times changed and somebody got paid more than I did.
And look, you know, the one thing that, you know, Billy definitely tried to do yesterday is try to calm the you know, lower the temperature a bit on this whole thing, because Wild fans are honestly, obviously nervous about the whole thing. But the problem that this does create is, like, I think Billy did think, like, all right, we're going to get Kaprizov done, and then we'll sort of get on with business for the rest of the summer. We'll know, you know, essentially what that is locked in, then what we can offer Eriksson, Ek, and Fiala, because those negotiations have not really started yet. They have not. And because the hope was get him done, then sort of count your dollars and cents, figure out what you could do, and execute the rest of your plan for the offseason. Now, all of a sudden, if we're in, like, mid-September and he's not done yet, you know, that does create a major problem here. And you know, at some point here, Billy's going to have to just say, all right, move on, and just, all right, let's put this on the back burner. Let's get Fiala and Eriksson Ek signed, then count our cents
and come back and say, all right, well, I came to you first, but you wouldn't pull the trigger. I had to get these things done.
The one thing here that's behind the scenes that I believe that Billy would obviously never say is that I do think that Kevin Fiala is potentially on the table in terms of a trade this offseason. So I think they want to keep him unsigned, and then you can sit there and say, all right, it's sort of your problem. You know, we'll trade the rights to Kevin Fiala in a deal. And now, you know, do you have to sign him first? Do you continue to keep him unsigned and then all of a sudden potentially go into the late in the summer where you have Fiala and Kaprizov unsigned? That's why he started these negotiations in March, by the way, because he was hoping to get this done and then move on with the rest of the summer. And now they're going to have to really sort of go to a plan B here potentially.
And, you know, I think the way that Billy Guerin has handled all this stuff, I don't think that he's likely to, as you call it, blank, but I he's not likely to all of a sudden change his stance. I think he's got in his mind, this is fair, this is what I can do, and I'm willing to dig in my heels because I believe in where we're headed, and I believe in the culture we've created. I believe in the standards that we've set. And if this is the way that you're approaching this, I'm not sure you're the guy that fits in well inside our organization anyway.
And, you know, look, and I don't want to do anything to disparage Kirill Kaprizov, because the way it works, I mean, he's over in Russia. He's, you know, he's clearly letting his agent run the show and trusting him, and then eventually he might have to get involved. But this happens in many, many contract negotiations. It doesn't happen instantly. I wouldn't call this a dispute yet. And Billy Guerin's did two contract holdouts in his career too. So he was on the other side. So I think he probably also gets that mentality where it's like, you know, you have to.
I think his ability to see things from the player's perspective is what makes him really good at what he does. And in every area, I mean, whether it be playing time, roster moves, lineup related issues, all that stuff. I mean, he's like, hey, look, I remember I was there, and he doesn't forget it. And I mean, I thought his comments about the Zach Parise situation were interesting that way. And I think this is too. I will say, yes, players stand back and say, my agent's running the show, but at some point, the player has to. Yeah. It's your deal.
Yeah, that's why I refuse to believe at the end of the day here that Kirill Kaprizov is going to say, "Yeah, I'm going to. I'll sign for $800,000 or $1 million and maybe get some under the under the table money over in Russia and give up this opportunity. He came here. He showed that he was a stud. You know, now it's just continuing to build that NHL career. And you know, that's why, like, I do think that at the end here, hopefully Kaprizov's side and Guerin's side just compromise and say, you know what, like Billy's got to understand, you know what, he's not going to take $9 million right now because he could potentially make this. So if he's not going to do that and we're not going to go three or less, maybe both sides can come in and have a happy medium for 4 or 5 years. You keep him still below age 30 where he could still hit that second contract, whether it's here or elsewhere. And hopefully both sides just, you know, come to a resolution here.
And if they do that, there's nothing that says at some point during that time, you can't come to terms and say, all right, let's extend the deal.
Right. Well, they can extend the deal going into the last year of the contract.
So, I mean, that's you could go, you could be, all right, we've seen now, you've proven yourself, that I don't think either one of us questioned that he's going to prove himself. But now let's just make your deal with us at age 29 instead of the free agent market. And that's where, yeah, I mean, I don't think that we're heading down a path necessarily that is a finite end to Kaprizov's time in Minnesota.
Yep, no doubt about that. Wanted to tell everybody that when it comes to losing weight, you have lots and lots of choices. But when it comes to losing weight and keeping it off, that's another story. That's what I am trying to tackle right now because I've hit my goal weight with Profile by Sanford, and now I'm just trying to maintain. And so far, I'm doing a pretty good job, despite the fact that I've gone on and started living my life and going out to dinners and things like that. So that's where Profile comes in. It's developed by doctors and backed by real science. Profile takes the guesswork out of losing weight and keeping it off. Profile isn't a diet. It's about changing your nutrition habits so you can make healthier choices for life. Look, anyone can lose weight, but if you want to lose weight and keep it off, that's why Profile's for you. Profile has worked for thousands and thousands of people, and it will work for you too. You could do this. Trust me if I can. Visit ProfilePlan.com to find a location nearest you. Use promo code Russo for a special discount. That's ProfilePlan.com. And I was lucky enough to be invited to a second straight Sunday dinner the other day at Anthony LaPanta's house, this one for Father's Day. So I figured if I celebrated my anniversary with you, I might as well go to Father's Day. And as usual, you put on a feast that you bought at Kowalski's.
Yeah, it was awesome. We went with the Akaushi strips that night and grilled some sweet potatoes that were phenomenal.
Unbelievable.
And, you know, we had the Forest of Fork mushrooms on the side that I know you're not a fan of those, but the rest of us had them and enjoyed them. And when you're going to have a meal like this, and for me, Father's Day was special. I don't get to spend it with my father, but get to spend it with three of my four kids were in town. And the fourth actually remembered it was Father's Day and called.
That was
very impressive. And, but we always, you got to start with the best ingredients. And for that, it's Kowalski's, and they have recipe cards for a lot of their cuts of meat. So if you're intimidated by it, just say, you know what, I want to grab the rib roast or whatever, and you have a recipe card for it, and they'll have something there. And they have some kind of like order a meal thing, and I'm gonna find out the details before next week's show. Because you can order that and have it delivered as well. So it's whatever you need, they'll take care of you. If you're going to have a great meal, you got to start with the best ingredients. And for that, Kowalski's is the place to go.
And you've seen Chris Lindahl's billboards all over town, the new Lindahl jingle on the radio, which is pretty cool. So you probably think you know Chris by now, but let me tell you about my experience with him. 3 or 4 years ago, I had an awesome condo in downtown Minneapolis, but we had these very expensive assessments to modernize the innards of the building, not even the cosmetic stuff. It was like all like pipes that we would never see before. And I'm like, all right, I think now's the time to put my condo on the market. But it was a bad time. And Chris and his team not only staged it, they marketed it, and they somehow sold it. Then they helped me find my new house, which was pretty awesome as well. So it was an incredible experience. And I highly recommend that you call them right now, especially in a time where it's proving easy to sell homes, but very hard to swoop in and buy them. So call Chris Lindahl Real Estate today at 763-401-SOLD or go to chrislindahl.com to request a no obligation guaranteed offer on your home. That's chrislindahl.com. Anthony, let's talk centers real quick, and then we'll go to Twitter questions. Jack Eichel is an interesting one. The Wild have had trade talks with him. I believe that right now they're dormant. I think that, you know, we're a month before the draft, almost exactly a month before the draft, actually exactly a month before the draft. And so right now it makes perfect sense that Kevin Adams would sort of – you know, go through the moon and try to, you know, look for anything possible to maximize the asset value of a guy like Jack Eichel. Hopefully at some point it comes down if he's not able to get what he wants. But right now, what I'm hearing is, I'm assuming that what I'm hearing that they want from the Wild for Jack Eichel, that there's just no chance it's going to happen. I think it's all futures. So first of all, say it's all futures. Say we're talking multiple first round picks and say they're two best prospects, which we all assume is Rossi and Boldy. One, you would never do that if you're the Wild and mortgage the future like that. Multiple first round picks and your two best, you know, essentially at least four first round picks, right? The other thing is that the Wild just can't do that. The only way you could add Jack Eichel is
you'd have to give away some salary.
Yeah. And so if you're Buffalo, what do you have? You don't need Matt Dumba. And so if you don't need Matt Dumba, I don't see how this deal can get done. And so I think what's going to probably happen is that they're going to move on from Jack Eichel and maybe start talking about Sam Reinhart. And maybe then could you do a Fiala for Reinhart straight up type trade, you know, RFA for RFA. The problem there, and you and I have talked about this, is Kevin Fiala has the ability to be a game breaker, a difference maker. Is Sam Reinhart that?
I don't think so. I think he's a good player, but I don't believe, and he's a good player that can play in the middle that where Fiala can't. But I don't think he is. I don't think he's a game-changing type talent, where Fiala, I believe, I'll say can be. He has been at times. He isn't every night. But, you know, I mean, if you truly are looking at this and you feel like you have to upgrade down the middle, which I believe the Wild do, and even though I trust what Dean Evason and Billy Guerin have said, like, look, offense can be driven by the wings on lines. But I think we also saw that the centers have to bring something, though. They can't just be, we'll drive everything with the wingers and just plug anybody into the middle. That isn't going to work either. I wouldn't do that. But I going back to Eichel, if that is truly what Buffalo has in mind, I got to believe a whole bunch of teams are going to be moving away from Jack Eichel.
Anaheim really going to give up Drysdale and Zegras for him? Because that would be essentially the same type of, you know.
Right, and I don't see teams. The only teams for whom a deal like that makes sense are teams that are a lot closer to contending than the Anaheim Ducks. Mm-hmm. And anybody that's close to contending probably is in the same spot as Minnesota, where the deal would have to involve some salary leaving. And I don't think we're talking about a guy that is worthy of four first round picks. Maybe that's just Buffalo starting high and with the full intention of, hey, let's just see if somebody's willing to pull the trigger on this, knowing that they're likely to back away from that. I don't know, but I can't imagine anybody pulling the trigger on a deal if that's the return.
Yeah, I think Columbus and Anaheim are the two front runners. I think Columbus makes a lot of sense too, because the only difference with Buffalo is that they might want to try to pluck one of those goalies from Columbus, where the Wild don't have that goalie probably to give up in this type of move. I mean, maybe you can somehow entice him with Kakinen, but it's not like Kakinen's Korpisalo or Mrazlikins, right? So I think that Columbus makes a lot of sense. So if you go on from there, let's talk some other centers that are potentially out there, Anthony, because we've talked Eichel, and we never really talk anybody else. So, like, if you're going to make a trade right now, there are guys. So Eichel and Reinhart are two guys. Philly has had some moderate interest in Dumba in the past. The way I understand it now is that there hasn't been a lot of recent trade talk. But, you know, would a Konechny do anything for you, even though he's not a center? But then maybe you can get a secondary piece like a Nolan Patrick or a Morgan Frost. I don't think Frost and Patrick makes a ton of sense for the Wild. I think you want to get a real legit player back there. Would that interest you?
Well, those guys all interest me a little bit, because I think there's still upside with all those players that you're talking about, a bunch of players who haven't peaked yet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Nolan Patrick, remember? I mean, this is a guy who was a top two pick, right? I mean, I don't know if he's – maybe it wasn't the top-end draft talent that year of some other years, but Morgan Frost, I think, is an intriguing player, but, you know, we're talking about guys that I'm not sure how different they are than or if they even are different than some of the guys, the younger centers that Minnesota has in their pipeline.
Yeah.
They'd interest me just because I think there's some upside.
I think
there.
Patrick's health is the biggest issue. Like, if you could get like a Konechny and a Morgan Frost, now that's something I would consider. Because my thing with Dumbo right now is like, I know that Billy doesn't want to lose him, but what, you know, Elliot Friedman said when I had him on the radio yesterday that makes a ton of sense that I haven't heard, but I believe Elliot when he says that if it looks like that you are going to have to expose Matt Dumba and other teams are calling Seattle to trade for Matt Dumba, which you will never know that is going on, you better trade Matt Dumba and get the assets value. That would be a devastating thing. I mean, you get $6 million of free cap space, right? If Seattle took him, but can you imagine if they trade Matt Dumba and then trade him for a bunch of assets that you could have had? Like, that's where I think the Wild have to now consider really heavily trading a Matt Dumba. Let's talk some other centers. Two guys that interest me, but the problem with them is they have very similar contracts. They're both 1 year from UFA at 5.35 and 5.65 respectively, and that's Zibanejad and Hurdle. The problem with that is that if you trade for him now and you don't extend him right now, and you don't know if you can extend him right now, you're going to have to give up probably a huge package for them. It would essentially be like trading for a rental, which we know at the deadline the last couple of years, he hasn't been willing to give up huge assets for a rental, future assets. Now, the difference is you'd get him for an entire season, not just a month and a half. But would those guys interest you at all, Zibanejad or Hurdle?
Zibanejad would for sure. Hurdle, not as much. Mm-hmm. Zibanejad's a game-changing player. I don't know what the price would be.
Yeah, and I don't even know if the Rangers would move him. I mean, they have to make a decision on him.
That's the first time
soon.
I've ever heard his name mentioned in a potential.
Well, I'm just looking
talk,
at guys. What I started looking at yesterday was like, all right, who's a year from up, 2 years from up? Because maybe then you can make some sort of move.
I think the Rangers are looking at things right now thinking that they might be ready to
win
as early as next year. I mean, maybe not the best team in the East, but I think they're expecting to be in the playoffs next year. And, you know, Gerard Gallant as their head coach, I think, tells you that they felt like this year they did not take the strides that they intended to, that they expected to take. I don't know. I really think that there are so many variables into this offseason, and maybe it's just that Minnesota, for the first time in a long time, is in a spot where you feel like they're on the verge of a contender and have some assets that could, and a GM that's willing to make bold moves. That I wonder if that's why this offseason just feels so different, or if it truly is that the market's different.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but I think Minnesota's in a spot where they're just, they are, I expect they'll be a lot more active in this stuff than in a lot of the previous off seasons. You've looked at it and said, they might sign like a second tier free agent, and that's about it.
Kuznetsov's definitely available. 4 years left at 7-8. The problem with him is that he's got so much baggage, Anthony, that with a GM that has worked so hard to change the culture in this locker room, are you going to parachute that guy in there as good as he is? I just don't think. I mean, there's video out there with cocaine on the table next to him. Like, it's just, you're not doing that. Let's move on from him, because I just, as good a player as he is and being the same nationality, I just don't see Billy Guerin do it. So it's empty words. It'd be just another word salad, right? Some other guys that are potentially, available. People keep on asking me about Dylan Larkin. He's the captain of the Red Wings. You know, Yzerman has surprised me before, but I just can't imagine that he'd move him. Barkov is a year from UFA. Even if he says this summer, I'm not comfortable extending the contract, there's no way you're going to get him this summer. Bill Zito would work all next year, so I think that's empty words. Barzal just signed a 3-year deal at 7. At some point, that might become an issue, but it's not going to happen now. So let's move on from there. Now let's go to the lesser tier guys. Christian Dvorak, Sean Monahan, maybe Ryan Johansson, the Strom brothers, Ryan and Dylan. I like Dylan, but, you know, I'm not a big Ryan Strom guy.
No, I'm not either. I would say out of those guys you just mentioned, and I'm not thinking at all about price Monahan intrigues me. Dvorak a little bit, but
his
durability is questionable, and he's a decent faceoff guy, but You know, I don't know.
That interest. Remember when the Wild were going to trade Zucker and Nino for Domi and Dvorak? Domi wound up having major injury and missed all that really next year, and Domi's a dog. So that would have been a disaster when you consider that you got Jason Zucker for Kalen Addison in a first.
Yeah.
Free agents, there's just, to me, you're not overpaying. There's zero chance the Wild sign Nugent Hopkins. Deneau to me is redundant to Eriksson Ek. Eriksson Ek to me is a younger, better Deneau, right? I mean, you wouldn't have Deneau in your top two.
No, not in your top two.
You know, so then
he's a good player.
What do you think of Alex Wennberg?
Just a guy.
Yeah, he flies. Then you have
But I mean, all those guys are if everything else, it depends on what happens with everything else. I mean, if it depends on if you make a deal, it depends on, you know, because a lot of these guys you're talking about, they could be good, a good piece inside a lineup. But if that's the one guy you're acquiring, I'm kind of thinking about all these guys in terms of if that's the one addition you make, how does it change your team? And to me, if Wennberg is the one guy you add, I don't think you've added enough. You haven't changed.
And then the other
enough.
Guys are sort of the same thing, like Janmark. Sezikas is going to get severely overpaid by the Wild.
Yeah, I mean, Sezikas to Glenn me Denning, a lesser Eriksson Ek.
If the Wild had no interest in Glenn Denning as a UFA, and not one team in the league had interest in Glenn Denning, I don't think they're signing him. Blake Coleman, somebody that's interesting. Corrali, Paquette. Guys like that are interesting, but they're not game changers. The one guy that I sort of predict, and he's not a game changer at this stage in his career, but the one guy that I do predict that the Wild would be interested in is Derek Stepan. Let's just throw some Twitter questions out at you, but we're getting long in the show. And when do you have to get out of here, by the way? Pretty quick. What time's your tea time?
I've got a tea time in about an hour.
Okay, so we'll be quick.
I have to drive. I'm not qualified to play it. Especially not today in the women's match play tournament. But I'm not this. I've got to head down the road to Loggers Trail.
I could live tweet you playing in the women's match play tournament. Pep Playboy says, if my research is correct, Philip Johansson's free next June if unsigned. By then, would the Wild receive a second-round pick, compensatory? Yes, if they make him a bona fide contract offer means, and I don't know what that means because the league changes its rules ever. But let's put it this way. The way the rule reads, the Wild can't just say, we're not signing you, and get that second. The Wild would have to make some sort of offer. So I don't know if that means make him a entry-level offer with no bonuses and hope he turns it down. I don't know that, but I don't see the Wild running out to sign him right now. Tim asks, will the Wild get an alternate jersey and a Winter Classic jersey next season? What I hear is they'll get a Winter Classic jersey and push the alternate jersey back to 2 years. They don't want to put two on the market in the same year. We talked to Camden, asked about realistic centers. We talked about that. Tony Schmidt is always a good one. Chicken or egg? Here's a good one. Does GM Bill Guerin need to sign a real center first to get Kaprizov to re-sign at a team-friendly contract, or does he need to sign Kaprizov first to see how much money left to get that one center? Let's put it this way. The Wild could trade for Jack Eichel and Barkov tomorrow, and I don't think that just all of a sudden his agent's just going to say, all right, we'll take that original contract. This
Kirill
is
Kaprizov
about,
is not holding out because he wants to see who the center is going to be.
Right.
He's just trying to maximize
cash. Now, he does want to see that there is a future here.
Right. But he's just, this is all about cash in his pocket.
Yeah. John says, besides the contract, do you feel Fiala wants to be here? I think so.
Yes.
I do think that him and Evason have an interesting relationship. There is no doubt that, and it's probably mutual, that Fiala drives Evason up the wall with his. I mean, because just look at postgame. Dean Evason will not rip any player, but he will unsolicited point out turnovers that Fiala makes. It's like that, you know, I've said it before on this podcast or on the radio or whatever. It's almost like that father that's coaching like AJ in Little League and only sees AJ's mistakes, right? And it's sort of like that
never happened in our
house.
Yeah.
Yeah. And AJ makes no mistakes. He's perfect other than leaving laptops in parks and having them stolen and getting lost on the way anywhere. So that's the interesting thing. But I think that, I think what Fiala wants to be is the man. The question is, does he have the ability to be the man? You know, I think that at the beginning of the season when Fiala was struggling and Kaprizov just took off, I think his feelings were genuinely hurt at one point. And then all of a sudden we saw a happy Fiala when Fiala started playing unbelievable.
I think Evason knows that Fiala is capable of a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And And to be honest, Bruce Boudreaux saw the same thing. Remember when he scratched him up in Toronto, and it was, there's more to be given by Kevin Fiala. And I don't know why it has, he hasn't been able to bring that on a consistent level. I believe that when he has, the sky's the limit. And that's why I think it's just too early to say, Fiala's not that guy. Because I think he could be that guy and could be the game changer in a lineup. Mm-hmm. And there are, it could be, you could be talking about a special forward group if it has both Kaprizov and Fiala in it. I mean, there aren't going to be very many teams that have two electric scorers like those two guys.
A couple more questions. Daniel Pearson asked Liam Kirk, your thoughts. My thoughts is he's a proud Brit. He's going to be the first Brit maybe ever to play in the National Hockey League, I believe. He is going to re-sign with the Arizona Coyotes. He'll sign. They just can't announce that deal until free agency. So he's already agreed to terms there. Somebody asks, C. Wright asks, what does it mean for both the Minnesota and Iowa Wild to have an ECHL affiliate now in Eastern Iowa? This is more for Iowa, not really. Nobody's playing in the ECHL and winding up in Minnesota anytime soon. This is more for their ability to move two-way guys back and forth between Iowa City or Coralville and Des Moines. Here's a good final topic of the show. That we can make sort of brief here, but officiating, Phil DeFountain asks about officiating. It's a huge topic right now, to the point that a couple guys in the Montreal Vegas series has essentially been, their series has ended. And now for the first time, all playoffs that I can remember in a long time, Furlad and Sutherland are reportedly going to do the next Montreal Vegas game as well. And that Dan O'Rourke and I think Chris Lee are done.
I think it's been a problem, and I think it's, I think the NHL needs to address this during the offseason. I think in a couple ways. Number one, the officiating in the postseason has always, and I know some guys argue that, you know, well, I don't want to impact the game by making calls. But
they're,
you impact the game just as much by not calling it.
Yeah.
And I've always believed
just
you can
call
set
the freaking rule book.
Call the rule book and call it the same way in January as you do in April. There's no other sport. It's not like baseball says, you know what? I don't want to punch a guy out at the plate during the playoffs and take the bat out of his hands, so I'm not going to call a called third strike in a play. I mean, that's asinine.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing that we're comparing this to. You know, I mean, in football you don't see it where I'm not going to throw a flag because it's the Super Bowl. I mean, it's a hold is a hold. And in hockey, for whatever reason, this year worse than others, they have decided, like, we're just not going to give any power plays. I mean, we saw it in the Minnesota-Vegas series. It was ridiculous what was allowed to go on. And I believe you can set the tone in a playoff series the same way you do in a regular season game. Make a call in the first period of game one that's by the rule book and just say, look, if you do this, if you deliver a right cross to the back of a guy's head after a scrum, in January, that's a roughing penalty, and it's going to be a penalty here. It's just because it's the playoffs doesn't mean that we're going to allow guys to be assaulted.
It just drives me crazy. We watch referees all the time that are sitting there watching this stuff, watching it happen, and they just ignore it with their hand on their hip, like they are the show. And it's just, it's disgusting the way the officiating has just unraveled here, and they need to figure it out. You know, this league, like they always do, they martyred Tim Peel instead of dealing with the absolute issue that showed during that whole thing. They took a guy that had 3 weeks left in his entire NHL career, and they pretended that they fired him because he said something in a hot mic. It was just, to me, it's embarrassing, and they need to fix this. It's not something that they can just sweep under the rug.
No, and I think but it goes further than that. I mean, I think they've got to really take a closer look at the supplemental discipline. Mm-hmm. I think some of the suspensions this year were more inaccurate than they've ever been before. And, you know, I think they really have to take a look at this. They've got to clean up goaltender interference. How many times have we heard guys say, look, I don't even know what's interference and what's not anymore. Yeah. I think they have to clean that up and make it more universal with how it's called. And I think that they've got to really take a closer look at all of this to make it more consistent. I think this year, more than any in the last 8, 9, 10 years, we've seen inconsistency at every level of the officiating and the discipline in this league, and it's a problem.
Yeah. Next week's show, Pat Foley just announced that this is going to be his final year after 39 years in the Blackhawks booth. We'll talk about that on next week's show. Maybe talk a little broadcasting as well. Imagine how many years Pat Foley would do if he didn't get into that the battle with the Wurtzes and didn't. There was like a 7 or 8 years.
One of the best.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Carson asks if I'm going to Red Rocks this summer for Trampled by Turtles. Probably not, just because it's 2 days before expansion, really. It's just a tough time that concert is going to take place, but I'll go see him at Treasure Island. Dylan asks, I went to Kelly's Bar and Grill in Red Wing, Minnesota, and was disappointed because I didn't see Trampled by Turtles there. That's funny, because Kelly's Bar, great, great Trampled song. Speaking of Trampled, let them play us out right now with Winners. Thanks to Trampled by Turtles for always donating the opening and the closing song for this podcast, Victory and Winners. Thanks to all our sponsors. Bosch Law Firm, Aquarius Home Services, your local authorized dealer for Connecticut water treatments, Minnesota Propane Association, Profile by Sanford, Kowalski's, and Chris Lindahl Real Estate. Talk to you next week, Anthony. So much coming out, there's nothing going in. I know that you feel like you're never gonna win. Oh, but the world won't forgive a winner. Yeah, I don't know if the smell is healthy, but it's unbelievable. I like it.